Dear listeners, Sai Ram. Welcome to our weekly series, Trust with Divinity. In this series, we bring you conversations with devotees of Bhagwan Baba. Well known in the Sai family and in the legal fraternity of Mumbai, this husband and wife team have dedicated their life to serving their personal God, Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba. Where and how did their spiritual journey begin? What motivates them to stay on course and dedicate their love, talent, time and devotion at the lotus feet of their beloved master? From teaching Bal Vikas to serving the state and national Sai organization at various levels, the twosome come as a package, standing by each other to serve a cause that they realize is way bigger than their combined vision. Many Sai youth and devotees look up to this team as their role models. Radio Sai is pleased to bring you a three-part conversation with Mrs. Kamala Pandya and Mr. Nimish Pandya of Mumbai. Today, we bring you its second part, and this was recorded in our studios of Radio Sai on August 2012. And in conversation with them is Radio Sai's Karuna Munshi.
So you're both obviously very successful and committed lawyers, and you're doing very well in your profession. How do you strike a balance between home, work and Sai duties? Basically, how do you integrate these different aspects of your life? It's not easy. Most people find it almost impossible. We get stuck in one rut and can't think outside.
No, like Saturday, Sunday is only Sai work.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
What if it affects your business?
Then one of us goes for the, like for example, sometimes I have to go, sometimes he has to go. So between the two of us, both don't go, then one of us goes on a Saturday. It's not regularly, it happens off and on, and then we strike a balance and I go or he goes, and we, but Sunday is exclusively for Sai work, either Dharma Kshetra or the Bal Vikas.
But that doesn't give you a day off to relax and rest.
But isn't this relaxation? Change of work is relaxation. And being with those children and listening to them, it's not stress. If you don't like something, it's stress. Mm. If you like something, you want it.
So the joy of it is...
Yeah, it's the joy of sharing was very important. And Sunday morning they'd come and they... In fact, I have kids who have been with me from the time before my marriage who still write to me, Auntie, you taught us this, we still practice. And I don't remember having taught, but they remember, you know.
Mm.
So... I mean, it's like how we hold on to the pearls that our teacher taught us. So for them, it's like the gospel truth. Auntie said it means it has to happen. So they're doing it. I mean, and it's so, that is the joy. That is what keeps you going and saying, if this much could change a person's life, how much more it would have changed my own life. That's how it is, you know.
Mm-hmm. I think there's also a dimension of priority, you know, that's very important in life. Because, if you choose to follow the path of Swami, mm-hmm. according to me, then I think the distinction of the various distinctions that you are saying must vanish, according to me.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you talk of Swami and Swami's presence, then there is nothing like a worldly life or a organizational life or a spiritual life. Then I would see no difference in all these kind of situations, because mm-hmm. then every second of your life is important. Right from the time that you get up in the morning, and you breathe your first breath consciously, to the time you spend time on yourself, to your family, to the work, to your driver, to your court, to the court, judges, back home. If everything becomes focused on Swami and Swami's way, then the distinction vanishes. And when the distinction vanishes, then comes the question of priority, that in your 24 hours, what would you like to do? Are you going to spend your 24 hours in trying to be useful to somebody else? Are you going to spend time for yourself? Are you going to be spending time on your own desires? When these priorities are set right, and I say that all of them are valid, I do not want to for a moment say that personal desires or personal life or family life or life with friends is not important. But how much time you allocate to that is very important. The priority is important. And I think for all Sai devotees and for all people who are involved in the world of Sai, in the process of experiencing Swami,
mm-hmm.
I think for them, the dimension of seva or the dimension of being useful to society in whichever way you can is an important situation. The attitude to make other people happy and be happy yourself. Adopting that attitude as a priority is very important, because that's what Swami did all his life. Swami spent his entire life in making people happy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, his happiness was people's happiness.
Mm-hmm.
And if you take that as an attitude of your life, then everything becomes nice. Your interaction with your driver can be a very happy experience. You meeting kids in the lift as you go up the building, somebody else's kids come and say hello to you. Then you're a happy person. Exchanging a note with even your servant is a happy note. Or saying hello to your colleague in the court is a happy note. Distinctions vanish then. It's because the focus is that I want to spread that love that Swami has spent.
So when you speak of this integration of different aspects of your life and across the board seamlessly and bringing Swami into all aspects of your life, don't you confront a conflict of interest and values? For example, you're in a profession where Swami used to, I must ask, you often joke, lawyers are liars.
Yeah.
Does that amuse you, by the way?
Well, it does amuse me, because in the factual world it's a fact, because in fact, they say the barometer of a great society, a healthy society, is a poor lawyer. But when you see a lawyer who's prospering and really making good money, then you know society is going to be down.
Oh dear.
Because this is the reality of life. In fact, I know Swami mentioning that 90% of the problems in the world today are caused by lawyers. You see? And he used to get angry and say, seven generations next and seven generations back, all will go to hell if we're lawyers, you know.
He
said, and therefore, in fact, when he insisted that I should become a lawyer, I used his argument against him. I said, no, Swami, you said you hate me so much that my seven generations down and up all are going to hell. You want to send all of us to hell? He said, no, you don't worry. I'll take care of you. You become a lawyer.
Your lawyers are insulated. Your special immunity, divine immunity.
So,
what about this conflict of interest to succeed?
The conflict of interest comes when this profession becomes a money generation profession. You see, if you deal with this as you want to make money out of this, then there is no one can help you but go down the dungeon. But moment you say that, no, I'm not bothered about the money, but I'm going to stick to my ethics. That means if you have the conviction of your soul and courage to tell you, if you come to me as a client, if I have the conviction that even at the cost of losing you as a client, I'm going to tell you the truth,
mm-hmm.
then I'm safe.
So do you lose clients by doing so at times?
I may have lost many clients, but I've never worried, because at the end of it, I made money. With the fact that people believe that I'm a good lawyer, I'm an honest chap. Now the fact in the world today, there is a dearth of lawyers whose integrity is unchallengeable.
Nice.
And therefore this mass of people, or this group of people who are good integrated lawyers with their integral character, are a rare species.
Mm-hmm.
So moment you get somebody like that, you are invaluable. So you're anyway making money out of it.
So that carved a niche for you here in the
niche. It's important to carve that niche, because you must support truth. And you must be a part of truth to be able to be.
And you can still make money.
Money is incidental. That's what Swami taught us.
Yes.
Swami used to always tell me, the first thing that Swami told me as a young man was, I was a young man, I always wanted to make money.
Of course.
To be a millionaire. I wanted my bungalow and my Mercedes and everything. So he caught me first and said, look, money is like a shoe. If your size is only 6, you better wear a shoe which is 6. If you have 7, you will trip and fall. If you have 5, it will pinch you. Therefore, money is like a shoe. You must have only enough, as much as you need. If you have more, you are in trouble.
And you both are on the same page with this, obviously.
And this becomes very clear for us. You see, that it is the work and the quality and the happiness that you give people that is going to bring in money.
Mm-hmm.
It is not, if you only go for money, then you will lose people and you will make people unhappy, which is not going to let you sustain.
Another thing is that we are very clear with our clients in the beginning. See, this is a very weak case. If you still want us to go ahead and fight for you, then we'll do it. But it's better that in the beginning we tell the client not to expect too much. Doesn't matter if you lose him in the beginning. It's better you lose him in the beginning than afterwards he tells that you didn't do a good job.
Right.
So you have to have the strength of character to tell them on their face at the beginning itself.
That's great advice.
Yeah. And to such an extent, we have also stopped taking such litigation. We don't take such matters where we know we have to do something which is hanky-panky. Luckily for us, we have gone into the company matters and all, where everything is black and white. There's no question of telling something which is not there. So integrity is a very important part in this.
And I think for the world of Sai, what is important is that for all of us who have had the grace of being touched with Swami's love, I think the one thing that Swami has always told us And that is the core of Balvikas, as Kamala and I understand. And
right.
That is the core of human values, which Kamala and I understand
from
Swami, is that the only way to love Swami is to be true to your conscience. Okay? That if you can manifest your conscience, the voice of conscience into your action, and live with it on a day-to-day basis, then you're true to Swami. Because that's what, in my limited understanding of Swami and being with Swami, I believe that what Swami ultimately wanted every person who came in touch with him to learn, that he should put his conscience into action and be habituated to put conscience into action at all times.
At all costs?
At all costs. Without fear. Because if you have identified the voice of conscience and you put into action, then that is dharma. And that dharma has to give you peace. This is very important. Because I cannot be having something in my heart and something in my mind and something in my tongue which Swami is always very dead against. Swami was dead against people for all, whether we did it consciously or we did it unconsciously. If the world today has to accept Swami according to me and be truthful to Swami, then all of us must put our conscience into action. That means I must be able to tell you nicely, sweetly, what I feel about you. There is no place for plagiarism. There is no place for being nice to people and not saying what it is. The Narova Konjurova concept doesn't work. In the world of Sai, it is conscience must be put into word, must be put into action in the sweetest possible manner.
Is there a cost to it? What happened, like for instance in your case, the desire for a bungalow, the Mercedes?
It came down the line. Everything comes at the right time.
In its own time.
In its own time it comes.
In fact, it came without us wanting it.
Wanting it came. I mean, I must confess that whatever worldly treasures that I may have acquired today are not for which I have strived. I never strive for them. They all come down my way. And that was a promise that Swami gave.
I will give you enough. That
I will give you enough.
When he gave me the example of the shoe, he told me, don't run after money. I give you enough. What you need, you will get.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that is a satisfaction that man must have. And that satisfaction will come only with self-confidence. And self-confidence will come only to those people who will put their conscience into action. This is the miracle of Swami, according to me.
Mm-hmm.
Even divorce matters, for example.
Yeah. What about them?
I always advise our clients, don't fight. If you have made up your mind that you don't want to live together, don't fight. File consent terms and finish it. Still, if they still want to fight, we send them to another lawyer. Because foolish, they're washing their private linen in public. 10 years they fight in the court, and in the end, there was one case like that. She came to me, and I told her, just settle. Take whatever he's giving you and just get out. Let him go out of your life. But she didn't. She wanted to fight. She lost so much money. In the end, what did she get? Some measly 2 lakhs.
Mm-hmm.
What was the need? And what was the stress? 10 years you went, your child was at 2 years, really the child is 12 years. She has seen the mother go through this stress. She's seen the father coming to the house, spending some foolish 2 hours with her. In the end, what happened? You're back in square one. 10 years back, if you had settled, you would have got that 2 lakhs at that time would have been
worth much more.
And Swami was a fantastic marriage counselor.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, the advice that Swami gave, we have used it many times in professional life.
Which is?
And it has worked very well. I remember when we were getting married. On the day when we were getting married, same day was the death anniversary of, I think, Brother Srinivas from Bangalore, his father's death anniversary.
Dr. Rajeshwari's
husband. So now you imagine the situation in the interview room. There is one side, there is a wedding being performed,
mm-hmm.
and the other side, it is Dr. Rajeshwari sitting there on the anniversary of her husband's death.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so there is a separation and there is a union happening at the same time, and Swami is counseling both of us. And I remember Swami telling her, she was upset, she says, no, Amma, why are you worried? What was he before you got married to him? You never bothered when he was a young boy, when he fell down, he did this, he did that. You didn't know him. So it didn't bother you. So what is it now? After death also, what is he to you? He was nothing to you before marriage. So what's your problem? Okay? Such in-depth explanation of the relationships at human level that can go, which are so ephemeral, which are so transient, only Bhagwan could teach this situation. And I tell you, I've done this many times and told many people, look, why are you worried? What was he before your marriage? And now what is he going to be after you leave him? So what's your problem? Okay, I made some lot of money on Swami's advice.
Without paying royalty.
I suppose I have to pay the royalty to Swami someday. Swami will take it from me in some way that he can.
I mean, both of you live such a life of deep commitment to Swami. How do your peers in the legal fraternity view the many worlds you both straddle?
Oh, yes.
They call us the Sai Baba lawyers.
In a complimentary way, I'm sure.
I'm sure they do that because, and I'll tell you, one thing which Kamala and I successfully did was, normally in every profession, there is a tendency to be a part of a peer group in that profession.
Of course.
That means there are journalists, then there is a journalist club, and you be a part of the journalist club.
Yeah.
And then in the legal fraternity, it's called the bar. We are all members of the bar. I don't know which kind of bar is who thought of this word, I don't know. But that's what it's called. And like that. But very steadfastly, we never became a part of that system.
Mm-hmm.
So we stayed away, stayed clear from any peer pressure that would come to on us or any kind. I mean, I would never go to a party of lawyers. I would never even go to a party thrown by judges. I would be away from that. In fact, I've never been to any functions of any bar or any organizations, never at all. But it has so happened that the very fact that I didn't associate with them, said I became a little aloof, I became a little exclusive. And therefore, everybody now knows me and Kamala as the lawyers who are there. They're there, but they're not there. You know, it's like Swami is there, but he's not there. Now that worked very well with us.
Uh-huh.
And that gave me a good stature. That gave me a great respect in my profession. Both of us get respected because they know that we are not going to be lowering ourselves down to any kind of a peer psychology or a peer a culture. That we would be what we are and we would be what we are. So I think anchoring to Swami was, I think, a great grace that Bhagwan gave both of us, rather than anchoring to the society as such. And this hold gave us much more than we would have got had we held on to that. You know,
mm-hmm.
We got respect, we got money, we got grace, we got peace, everything together. Not that life doesn't have its own problems, but they become very negligible. They don't bother you. We still go on in life. That's what really happens.
A lot of self-confidence required to take that stand. When you're in a profession and you want to be part of the profession without pandering to the socializing and the networking, doesn't that put you at a disadvantage?
I don't think so. I mean, self-confidence came, but more than that, the grace was more. I thought it was 90% grace and 10% self-confidence.
Yeah, but
I mean, just work just flowed, and we didn't have to even think about work.
Mm-hmm.
And good work, not rubbish, like, you know, mm-hmm. not things like taking bail application, mm-hmm. nothing. Real good class work, I mean, which would give you a standing in society.
I would say we are examples of people who have not gone out to get work. We are an example of a set of lawyers in a law firm where I don't go out to sort of tell people that how the networking happens.
Mm.
Networking is a word which I don't believe is required in the world of Sai. I think working with Swami is good working. We don't require
that's
any
enough networking.
I think so.
That's all with the universal.
And when we say Sai, I would like to even stretch it further now. The fact that Swami represents the principle of Godhead. If today's man, if today's young people accept the principle of Godhead and learn to trust it, then everything that they want in the world is possible. But they must be able to catch on to the God principle. That's very important. And that's what Swami wants all of us to do, to catch on to the God principle. Then everything becomes easy.
You make it sound so easy, but living in contemporary India, it almost seems impossible to get through a day, to get a job done, let's say if it involves any kind of public services, outside assistance, without compromising on your values, because corruption is so rampant.
That's true. You see, how does corruption bother you? Corruption bothers you when you have
done something
or you want to get something done in a manner where you want to please somebody else. I would rather have a situation where I would not enter into an area where I need to be corrupt or where I need to help in a corruption situation.
No, let me give you an example. If you go to a municipal office and you want a simple thing, an example I can give you is, for example, you've lost somebody in the family and you want a death certificate.
Mm-hmm.
The clerk in the municipal office says, unless you bribe me, I'm not going to give it to you anytime soon. So either you can bribe him and get it when you want, or you keep going back over and over again, and either he's on holidays or his boss is not there or it's still not ready, come back tomorrow. You can spend 6 months just waiting for a small document, a small job to be done. How do you
see?
I tell you. Two examples I'll give you. I live in an apartment in Bombay.
Yeah.
And I lived.
Recently
changed it. And I needed to get an internal staircase done into my house.
Mm-hmm.
The internal staircase was required because then it would have made a lovely duplex for me. And
right.
I would have had the workstation down and the house on top.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in a building which is already existing, this is a very difficult thing to do in the corporation setup in Mumbai. But I was determined, and so was my father at that point of time, that we would not do anything illegal. We made the necessary applications. I got the right people to speak to the right people because I thought that was fair enough. I mean, if I know somebody, I should ask somebody to speak. But still, it took me 1.5 years to get that permission. And I waited patiently. I didn't bribe anybody. I didn't tell anybody. I said, now, man, follow your process. Even I used to go and tell them that if you can't find the fire today, never mind. I'll come again after 15 days when you find the fire. I was very patient. I was very loving. I did not lose my cool. I was not hyper about situation. I patiently waited for 1.5 years. Ultimately, at the end of 1.5 years, the officer himself came and gave me the permission that, sir, your permission is granted. You can do it. Why I'm saying this is not because I'm great or something special. I do believe in the principle that Swami has said, that there is a element of Godhead in every human being, which if you touch that core, it works. If I'm able to touch your heart, I'm confident that you will respond. Probably not immediately, but after some time, you will respond back to me. The same thing happened when my father died. The death certificate issue came. I immediately filled up the form, gave it to the man. The man turned around and said, as you rightly said, yeah, I can't give you, it'll take 20 days, take 30. I said, never mind, sir, take as much time as you like. Don't worry about it. I said, whatever is the cost I'll pay. But you take your sweet time, I'm in no hurry for the death certificate. He threatened to give me after 1 month, but after 5 days, he did call me back and say that, no, sir, your death certificates are ready, and I wanted 10 copies. He had given me 15 copies on his own, and he gave it to me. And I did tip him thereafter, not as a bribe, but as a matter of goodwill, I did tip him thereafter. But I didn't promise him. But the fact that I could be nice to people, that I could touch somebody's heart, is an important dimension. What I do believe nowadays we don't do is, we don't share our love, we don't touch people's heart. We demand things, we degrade people, we tell them that no, you have to do this. The right is there to demand, but there is a duty to be nice, there is a duty to be loving. That's where we are missing out, you see. And what Swami taught us was this, how did Swami get things done? I mean, I always go back by knowing what Swami did. If Swami got these big things done, how did he do it? He never bribed anybody, he didn't spend any money, but he did it. I mean, people may say he's God and therefore people did it, but no, I don't believe it. I do believe that Swami was nice to everyone. Swami touched the heart of everyone. If there was a Nobel who came, or if there was an XYZ who came and gave a few million dollars, Swami touched that man's heart. Swami made him feel good, and therefore that man was willing to open his heart out to Swami. Now, this is the example that we need to follow in our day-to-day life, in relationships. If I want that my servant should do something good for me, I must be nice to him. If I want to go to the corporation and tell that guy, I'm telling you, if you be nice to him, hi, how are you, hello sir, how are you, how was the day, good. But if I go and tell him, look, I wanted this get done, and I start cursing him, then he says that thousands who are cursing me every day anyway. So what are you different? You also stand in the queue. What does it matter to me? But you touch the heart of somebody with love, that man responds to you. That's been my experience in life. That you be nice to people are nice to you. But the problem is we've lost the habit of being nice to people. We demand, we expect people to be nice, but you don't be nice to people. That's not correct. The duty starts with us, that we have to be nice to people. I think when this thing changes, it happens. You've seen the miracle. I mean, people whom the world says are very bad people, they come to Swami and be very good. How? How did it happen? Not to names, I'll tell you. After the Mahasamadhi, when Swami passed away, I had an occasion to meet many, many very, very big people who we've seen with Swami all the time.
Mm-hmm.
When I met them individually after Swami's Mahasamadhi, I was really struck by awe. These people are very great people in their own rights.
Right.
They're like kings in their domains. Mm. They're arrogant. They're rich. They've got power at their command. They've got everything. If you talk to them, they need not even talk to you for years. That's the kind of power or money and status that they enjoy. But when they all came to Swami, and together, dealing with one of them was difficult on their own. Here there are hundreds in front of him, Swami sitting at his feet. On what power?
Yeah.
Only on the power of love.
Swami's love.
Therefore, corruption is a malady in society which we've created by not being nice to people, by making people suffer all the time.
What about greed? What don't you think greed plays?
But greed is bound to be, because you have so much dichotomy in society. I have a television blaring in my house, five televisions blaring in my house, and the media creates the same situation. That poor man on the street, he wants his money. His children want money. How does he get it from? And that's where the whole value system that Swami spoke of comes. There's so much of dichotomy in society. How do you handle that situation? And that's where Swami's principle of human values and Swami's principle of love is going to cure this. And somebody has to start. If all of us who came to Swami, if we don't start it, if we don't start this virtuous circle, who else will start?
Mm-hmm. And there are millions of us. Enough of us to make a difference.
For 80 years, Swami set the heart of millions of people all over the world. Mm-hmm. If all of us take a decision that we want to love people, we want to be nice, and we want to put these principles in life, I think overnight the world will change.
Ms. Pandey, earlier on you mentioned about a period in your life when Swami did put you on the ice, so to speak. That's when you had to realize the omnipresent God, that you had only one friend and you felt he'd almost dumped you, and then you found he was still with you. Tell us, how did you cope? What happened and how did you cope with it?
I think that time my solace was the Balvikas. That time my solace was the fact that I could still be associated with the organization and do the things that I was doing.
So your Sai work was your solace?
Yeah, I think my Sai work, being involved in the organization, helped me to be with, to cope with that situation.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think I needed a lot of help from Swami. I needed a lot of love and grace from Bhagwan in terms of my transformation. For me, friendship was very important from childhood. I had to depend upon a friend. I always needed a friend as a support. And that came with Bhagwan. But Bhagwan wanted to free me from that dependence.
Mm-hmm.
So when I look at the hindsight, I believe that those years were the years when Swami was really giving me strength to realize that the real Swami is inside me and not outside.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? That was the learning process which was happening, because that was what I was going to speak in later life. That was how I was to understand what Bhavikas is. That was how I was to understand what human values is.
Experiential learning.
Was actually what was happening with Swami, because I remember he taught me this in a very, very strong manner, that God is inside and not outside. Let me share with you a very classic example of what happened. It was many years ago that I was in Puttaparthi, and Kamala and I were just married, and we were to finish some conference which was happening and going back to Bombay. In the meantime, a very senior devotee couple from Bombay expressed that they were going to Kanyakumari for Rameshwaram for darshan. So they said, would you join us? So we both thought it's a good thing. Kanyakumari, Rameshwaram, going is not a problem. I mean, one can always go to Rameshwaram for Jatra. So we left with them. Moment I left Puttaparthi, my father was teaching in the university that time. So Swami went to my father. And straight away, it must be hardly a few minutes that I left Puttaparthi, and Swami was in the portico with my father.
Where has your son gone?
So my father thought that there is a very senior devotee, very renowned devotee in the ashram and in the world. And if Nimish has gone with him to Rameshwaram, it's something nice to... So he took out his chest broad and told Swami that Swami, Nimish has gone with so-and-so to Rameshwaram.
Mm-hmm.
And that was it. Heaven, hell broke loose that day. And Swami got so wild. Why did he go there? Who told him to go there? Why did he go there? What is there that is not here? Now, that was a big thing to say.
Yeah, huge.
Huge. And my father was shell-shocked. I said, what did I say? Why did I say all this? I got to know that Swami is very upset that I went to Rameshwaram. Now I said, gosh, what's wrong with Swami? I didn't go for a party. I didn't go for a movie. I went to Rameshwaram. What is wrong in going to Rameshwaram? But that struck the beginning of my testing time. And in all those 5-6 years, I became a great student of Balvikas. I used to attend Kamala's class. In fact, till today, I am like Eklavya sitting outside Kamala's class, because I really love the way she takes her class. In fact, even today for me, it's a matter of great joy and pleasure. If she's conducting a class, I sit in the corner. However busy I may be, but I sit in the corner and listen to the class. Because that bond which I see between Kamala and the children when the class is going on, I know she's not my wife and those kids are not kids. It is really divine presence of what's happening with those kids. I can see the transformation happening. I can see the joy on their face. I can see the total ambience which is there, which is amazing. And for me, that is a matter of great joy. In fact, as an All India Vice President, I've mandated all my state presidents and trust coordinators to attend a Bal Vikas class regularly. I said, if you want to have Swami's divine feet, your work as a state president is not going to help you. Your work as a trust coordinator is not going to help you. Go and sit in a Bal Vikas class, you'll reach Swami's divine lotus feet very fast. In fact, that's a mandate of me. But those are the years when I got involved into the EHP program, I got involved into the human values implementation program. And that's the time when Swami gave one discourse in the Mandir and he explained the situation that ultimately I don't want anything. Conscience is love. The voice of conscience is truth. If you put the voice of conscience into action, that is dharma. And only to that man who forms the habit of putting conscience into action, peace is his birthright and nobody can take it away from him.
Mm-hmm.
This was such a strong lesson that came to me in those years that those were the years when I really realized that this is the truth that Swami has come to teach us. This went on and I really progressed in my path of sadhana and understanding. And I got more and more involved into schools, Bal Vikas movement. All my dramas were started getting based upon that. In fact, every Ashari program, if you see, that fact that the conscience and the voice of conscience is paramount became a theme for me in every way,
mm-hmm.
you know. And this ended after many years when one day Kamala was unwell and she was to be operated and none of us knew. In fact, she was suffering and going through hell and we had an interview in Vrindavan. And very dramatically, as an artist of great flavor would do, Swami called both of us inside. And in style, he closed this door, you know. And like a typical actor, he turned his head like that.
You went to Rameshwaram, didn't you?
Oh my God.
After so many years, he picked up that conversation.
Wow.
And I caught his feet and Swami, I have never been. For me, Swami is in my heart. Swami is nowhere else. Swami is God and God is inside the heart. That's correct. Then he was happy.
That was a tough test.
That was a tough one which he gave me.
Were you part of the test?
No. Yeah, no. He she was like...
I was the pampered one.
No, she was the pampered one.
So you were the princess and he was going through the test.
On the contrary, I think Swami also was a little scared of her. Because in all those training years, I think every time I met Swami, the first question is, wife kaisa hai? So that used to be a great joke. I said, look Swami, I'm sitting in front of you and you want a wife kaisa hai? In fact, I have a picture in my bedroom behind where Swami is distributing gowns and I'm receiving the gown from Swami's hand. A very close-up picture. Mm-hmm. If somebody watches it, they'll think, oh, Swami is showering so much love on Nimish. But that conversation of that picture is,
how is good? Why?
Gown in the hand. I'm receiving the gown. Wife kaisa hai? I said, Swami is really close. So I suppose that's the relationship which he had. I remember Swami, she had put a condition with Swami.
Yeah.
Swami, you want to say that?
With the surgery one?
No. This is when he called us before this, much before. We didn't know there was going to be a surgery, but he called us at Vrindavan.
Mm-hmm.
And when I went in, I told him, Swami, I want to take one promise from you. What is it? I said, when you pass by, no, don't turn your face that side. Just say hello and go.
That was a smart move.
Yeah. So he avoided the whole thing. He gave me that Vibhutika box and took us in and explained how much I suffered. All that was irrelevant to me. I kept saying, Swami, promise. Swami, promise. Swami, promise. Don't turn your face. I cannot bear that face turn when you pass by. Just say a little. So he is very, very smart. He did technical compliance. He said, okay, tum.
Yes, I will do it.
Whenever he passes by, I do, and go.
Hey, that's better than just turning the face. Yeah. At least you know he's doing it for you.
Is more than the people around you are looking, what have you done? So once I was seated behind, he came right behind and he's technically perfect, no? He'll never let his word go. He came behind and I said, right, in the family used to sit in front and then I was behind. He came right there. And he stood in front of me, and looked at me, so I said, Swami, I want to talk to you.
How much talking?
I said, Swami, you're not talking. Talking. I'm talking. So he kept his promise wherever
he knew how to deal with the pair of lawyers.
Yeah, he kept it.
Technically, he kept the terms on his own terms.
The law of contract was very well learned by Bhagwan.
Absolutely.
In fact, even in these Ashadi plays, he would go back and tell whoever's at dinner with him. Somebody would say,
Nimish put up a very nice drama.
He will immediately say,
no, his wife helps him a lot.
Wife does everything.
It was a great
name balance. Goes to husband, wife does. He was always taking my side. So, it's a big loss for us, like, you know, to see that. Now I keep saying, who asked, where's your wife?
No. With Kamala, it's always been that Swami was very particular to acknowledge her presence and all that. I don't know, ultimately out of great love, but apparently he was very worried that if I don't talk about her, what will happen to him and what will happen to me. So I think both of us
are... One day he sent an apple out when that police course was there.
He sent the apple, go and give your wife.
You know, he from the mandir, he saw me seated in the... And I just happened to be seated, I didn't know. And I could see Swami calling him and Dr. Pitre and all that and giving one apple and second apple. I said, just see, you can give two apples there. I'm sitting over here. And actually the second apple was for me.
Oh, wow.
He said, give it to your wife. She's sitting across. He was telling him, but I didn't know that time. I came to know later. So he's always been very caring, like a father.
Beautiful.
To ensure that my marriage worked very well, I was very grateful to have Swami as my divine counselor all the time, so that I don't mess up things at all.
You needed God's intervention to make it happen.
You can imagine what a challenging task must have been.
So when you look back at this long journey together that you've been instruments in his hand, what are some of the greatest life lessons you both have received from Swami?
Just live and let his will prevail. To certain age, somebody will say that, oh, that's non-challenging, that's boring. You just have to think of it and he lets it happen if it is good for you. So always leave it to him. Swami, if you think it's right, do it for us.
What about if you're going through a really difficult time in your life?
I went through it. I mean, for 20 years I suffered a lot, which I... He told me that I suffered.
Health-wise.
And the doctor told me health-wise, I suffered, but I didn't feel the suffering.
You didn't feel it.
No, in fact, the doctor got shocked. You intelligent girl, how did you manage all this? And I had discomfort, I had trouble, but there had no pain.
Mm-hmm. So, but if somebody is going through a really difficult time, lot of challenges, sometimes they come crashing at you, how would you see Swami's will prevailing through it all? Sometimes people go through lot of difficulties in their personal life.
I think acceptance is a big thing in life.
Acceptance?
You have to accept. Because... while you strive to excel, the flip side of that strife is acceptance of the fact that there is a divine will, that praise. The balance between human effort and divine grace and divine will is something that you have to learn to accept in life. Being happy and being satisfied is important. I think I would put the greatest lesson that I have learned from being with Bhagwan is that I'm fundamentally a happy person. I'm fundamentally a peaceful person. I don't want to lose that happiness and peace for any reason whatsoever. Whether it's my wife, whether it's my business, whether it's my money, whether it's my desire. I don't want anything where my bliss and my happiness is lost. Mm-hmm. In fact, I like the way Swami used to say that.
Sai Ram, you just heard the second part of a three-part conversation with Mrs. Kamala Pandya and Mr. Nimish Pandya of Mumbai. This was recorded in the studios of Radio Sai on August 2012, and in conversation with them was Radio Sai's Karuna Munshi. The concluding part of this conversation will be aired same day, same time, next week. We hope you enjoyed this program. Your comments and feedbacks on this are welcome. As always, you can reach us through email. Our email ID is listener@radiosai.org. Thank you, and Sai Ram from Prashanthinilayam.